So we're going to continue our reading of Brihadbhagavatamrita this morning. We're on the sixth chapter, Priyatama, the most beloved. And Maharaj Prickett has just reminded his mother, after describing how Narada has come into the assembly of the, or is on his way to come into the assembly of the Yadavas in Dwarka, and how he was overcome with emotion, transcendental emotion. Prickett Maharaj has reminded his mother that now he's going to tell this next part of the Brihadbhagavatamrita, which is very important. And because it's very important, he's asking her to be very, very attentive. We discussed this yesterday. So now we're going to hear the next part of this story, which is very charming and wonderful, full of juice. We start from text 6 to 8. Tasmin ahantikenapi vaimanasyena veshmanaha antak pratokche suptasya prabho parshvam vihayasaha adurad dehali prante nivishtas srimat udavaha bhaladevo devakicha rohini rukmini tata satyabhamadhyonyascha devya padmavati chasa praviti harani kamsa mata dasyas tatapara. That day, Lord Krishna was for some reason disturbed in mind and asleep in the inner quarters. And Uddhava had left him and sat down nearby on a terrace on the edge of the palace. There Uddhava was joined by Baladev, Devaki, and Rohini, and queens of Krishna like Rukmini and Satyabhama, as well as various maidservants and other ladies, including Kamsa's mother, Padmavati, a lady who had the habit of making public gossip out of Krishna's personal affairs. Commentary, Digdarshini. Precisely why Lord Krishna was disturbed, Parikshit will reveal to his mother a little further on in his narration. He does not want her to become agitated by hearing this too soon. Padmavati was Ugrasena's wife. The Srishti Kanda, 48-51. Of the Padma Purana describes that after their marriage she stayed a short time in the house of her father, King Satyaketu. At that time, a demonic messenger of Kubera's named Drumila or Gobila became attracted to her, and by disguising himself as Ugrasena he seduced her. The child born from this illicit connection was Kamsa. I always wondered how it was possible for such exalted parents such as, you know, Devaki and Ugrasena Padmavati and Ugrasena to produce a child like Kamsa. I always wondered about that. You know, because in the Vedic culture, the Sanskaras were followed more strictly, especially at this time when Krishna was there. Everything was being followed like very strictly. And when things are followed strictly, then the children that are born, although we're not into by birth, you know, Krishna says guna karma vibhaga shaha, the chatur varna maya shristam, guna karma vibhaga shaha. The varnashram system is organized according to the qualities of people, not the birth. But on the other hand, because everybody was following strictly and the people of certain quality would be with people of the same quality, in general, even the birth would result in a person of that quality. This is the kind of root of the caste system now in India, whereas before there was actual quality, but now a person born in a Brahmin family is putting himself forward and taking the duties and the responsibilities and everything and the authority of being a Brahmin or a Kshatriya, but not having the qualities. Because the Garbhadhana Sanskara and all of the different sanskaras that go into making a person, you know, of character and quality are not being followed. So I was always wondering, how is it possible that Kamsa, you know, could be born from that combination? Of course, we know that Prahlad was a great devotee and he was born from a combination of Hiranyakashipu and his mother, so anything is possible. But I always wondered about that, because this was in Krishna's pastimes, in Krishna's time. So then, now here we have the answer. You know, that actually it was a demon that conceived Kamsa in the womb of Padmavati. This is interesting, sidelight. Sanatana Goswami is giving us some detail. Now, one very important point in this verse, which is going to be elaborated on later, is the fact that Krishna was disturbed. You know, the mundane conception of God is either he's, you know, like a no-face in the clouds person who's always knowing and all perfect and all this and all that. So there's no question of God being disturbed. No question. So now we find out that God is actually complete, that Krishna is actually unlimited and complete. And in order to be unlimited and complete, he has to have emotions also. We have our emotions and we have the things we go through, and he goes through these things also. But he doesn't go through them in the same way that we go through them. He doesn't go through them as a result of being negatively affected by the modes of material nature and the results of, you know, his interaction with them in a way that isn't proper. No, he becomes disturbed for a completely different reason. And we'll find out later in the chapter, you know, what that reason was. Of course, we know already that the only thing that actually disturbs Krishna is, you know, his feelings of love and separation from his devotees. If he sees his devotees not happy, then he's not happy. Sanatana Goswami, in one verse, coined the phrase paradukaduki. The Vaishnav is paradukaduki. He's unhappy when he sees other people unhappy. His happiness depends on the happiness of others. He doesn't think of his own happiness. He's happy when he sees other people happy, and he's unhappy when he sees other people unhappy. So Krishna is like that. You know, Krishna is like that, but he's perfectly like that. So he was disturbed because, you know, first of all, he was very attached to the residence of Braj, where he grew up. Now he's in Dwarka, and he's a prince, king. He's got so much, surrounded by so much opulence and so much, you know, he has duties to do to, you know, run the kingdom and deal with opposing elements. And of course, he has this mission, you know, to fulfill, to clean the earth of the demons so that the devotees can be peaceful and worship him happily. But still, he always is remembering Vrindavan. He's always remembering Braj. Anyway, we'll get into that subject later. It's a very deep subject, how it is that Krishna never leaves Braj and at the same time is always thinking about Braj and separation at the same time. This is a very deep subject, and it will be dealt with as this book unfolds. But for now, Krishna is in his bedroom, and he's upset. And the devotees, the intimate family members and great devotees of Krishna have congregated out on the veranda just outside the room, and they're talking, trying to understand what's going on and trying to understand what they can do about it. This is the nature of pure devotional service. Pure devotees, they want Krishna to be pleased in every way, all the time. So they're always thinking about how to do that. Just like when I came in, I was charmed by, Maharaj was there looking at the altar and, you know, making arrangements how it can be like this to train Mukunda how to better this and that. And this is pure devotional service. When the devotees, they all want everything to be nice for the Lord. You know, the more personal our relationship is with Krishna, the more we awaken and develop our personal relationship with Krishna, which has been kind of a theme we've been into for the last few days, the more the details will automatically come. You know, when you're thinking of how to please somebody, then automatically you think, you know, what to do. And you don't have to be, you don't have to sit in a corner morose waiting for somebody to tell you what to do. And then if they don't tell you what to do, then you criticize them because they didn't tell you what to do. This is conditional devotional service and the influence of the mode of ignorance. But better is to, you know, look yourself and see out of devotion, you know, and want to do, to make the Lord's situation as nice as possible, and then do it. Krishna likes this devotional service. Okay, text 9. Tushnim bhutash chate sarve vartamana sarvismayam tatrishi naradam praptam Aikshanta purvachistitam. All of them sat there silent, in shock. They saw that Sri Narada had arrived, and he was acting strange. Commentary. These devotees, who would regularly take part in Krishna's daily palace activities, were dismayed that Krishna was lying in bed, way past the time he normally rose. It was obvious to them that something was seriously wrong, but they couldn't discern exactly what. Nonetheless, they now had to attend to Narada's arrival. So this is a difficult situation, you know. In the Bhagavatam it's described that Krishna in his grihastha lila, in his grihastha pastimes, he follows everything perfectly. He rises in the morning before the cock crows and he does his, you know, all the different things that households are meant to do to keep themselves pure and to keep their households pure. He did everything perfectly. And, you know, you can imagine how perfect he must be at it because he's the most perfect. He's the all perfect. So you can then, all of a sudden, one day, he stays in and everybody's like, you know, shocked. Krishna staying in? Yeah, how is this possible? This can't be possible. I mean, sometimes Krishna does this in order to make life interesting for his devotees. One time when Radharani and the gopis decided that they were going to go to Govardhan from Varshana to collect flowers for a big festival. There was a big festival they were having. And, you know, there were flower gardens in Nandagram, in Varshana, but they were all designated for the deity. And so there weren't really a lot of flowers for them as children to gather together and to put on this festival where they had to decorate and do so many things. So then Radharani got this great idea that, let's go to Govardhan because there's so many flowers and we can pick unlimited flowers. And everybody said, yes, great idea, fantastic idea. So then they made this plan. So, you know, Radharani's brother is Sridham and he's Krishna's best friend. So, you know, very soon, because he's brother and he's like in the household, so he found out about this plan and he said, oh, great. So he ran over to Nandagram and he told Krishna, oh, we should go too. You know, we can take our cows there today. And then, you know, so the cowherd boys came to Krishna's, outside Krishna's window. Krishna was still in bed. They came out to his window and they started making all this noise and blowing horns and bugles and shouting, crying out, Krishna, come on, you need to come out. You know, the cows, they're not going to come unless you come and milk them, and everyone's waiting for you. What are you doing? And besides, there's a great adventure that waits us today. Varshabani Nandini, she's planning with her girlfriends to go to Govardhan. So we want to go there also with our cows and calves. And Krishna, he's upstairs, and he's listening. He's on the balcony, actually, and he's looking down and he's listening. And then he gets this idea, Radharani and the gopis are going out to Govardhan, huh? So they always accuse me of many things. Maybe this is my chance to get even with them. So but what am I going to do with all the cowherd boys there? How am I going to play my tricks with all the cowherd boys? So then he got this brilliant idea, and he grabbed the hold of the railing and grabbed his stomach and started going, and he pretended like he was sick. And then he kind of staggered into his bedroom off the balcony, and all the cowherd boys became very upset. They went running up the stairs into Krishna's room, and there was him, and Krishna had gotten under the covers. Meantime, he had gotten under the covers, pulled the sheets over his head, and just was there, quiet, didn't say anything. So everybody was like, anyway, at the end of the day, what happened was the outing for the cowherd boys was canceled. Because Krishna said, no, I can't go out today, I've got headache, and I'm not feeling well, So even though Krishna, he's all-powerful, he's all-perfect, he never gets sick, he never is hungry, he never wants anything, he never needs anything, there's never any really duty he has to perform. He's the supreme enjoyer. Everything is, all the energy in the spiritual world is just waiting for something they can do to please Krishna. Krishna has a desire. Immediately all the energy starts to organize itself in a way that will fulfill that desire. There's no question of him needing anything or wanting anything or lacking in anything. But he does these things. This is why his pastimes are called Leela. Leela means it's like a theater, it's like a play. He's putting on this play. And in this play, he does all these things just to make the relationships interesting, just to please his devotees. Or make them angry, or tease them, or whatever, give them things, or whatever. He does all these things to keep all the varieties of life, the most interesting. So anyway, aside from that, when he leaves Vrindavan, sometimes he himself becomes overwhelmed with emotion. Thinking about Vrindavan and thinking about even though it's his expansion, Vasudeva expansion, and in a sense, he's different than the original Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, that stays in Braj, still he's the same person. And because he's the same person, even though he doesn't exhibit all of the qualities of the original Swayam Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, who stays in Vrindavan in his apricot form, still he remembers the Brajbasis, and he feels separation from them constantly. And in the Rasa Shastras, in the different literatures compiled by the Goswamis, there's all kinds of details about how Krishna, or the residents of Dwarka, even Mathura and Dwarka, are always trying to figure out ways to help Krishna overcome this constant remembrance of the Brajavasis. So they were all out on the veranda now, and they're all sitting there, and they're in shock. They're wondering what's going on. And all of a sudden, even though their minds are all absorbed in Krishna, here comes Narada. And he's like, falling on the ground, and tears are shooting out of his eyes, and he's like, can't play his veena, and he's obviously... something's up with him also. So even though they were very concerned with Krishna, when the devotee of Krishna comes, they have to take care of him nicely. You see? Text 10. Utaya yatnat aniya swastyam nitya chanenatam pimashu klinavadanam prakshalahu chanayar lagu. Standing up, they brought him carefully to where they had been sitting. They took a moment to restore him to a condition closer to normal and wiped dry his face, wet with tears of love. Then they spoke to him, simply and gently. Commentary, Digdarshini. When the devotees began talking to Narada, they spoke quietly and in few words, so as not to awaken Krishna, and also not to agitate Narada further by saying something wrong. So, you know, when somebody that you know, that you're close to, is upset about something, you know, you generally have to be careful how you talk to them. You can't just say anything about anything. You speak gently and you speak quietly and you don't say too much because you don't want to cause them to be more disturbed. And also the devotees had this added dimension that Krishna is in the bedroom and they don't want to disturb him further. So anyway, they take care of Narada when he comes. It's described that even when deity worship's going on, if you're the only one doing deity worship and a great devotee comes, then you can stop the deity worship temporarily and greet the devotee and treat him properly and then come back to your deity worship. In this way, devotional service becomes more personal, because we may be attached to the ritual, doing something just exactly in a certain way to please the deity, but without the personal aspect in our service, we may forget how dear the devotee is to Krishna. And so when the devotee comes, it will please Krishna more if we stop making a circle for a few minutes and greet him and then come back to taking care of him. That will please Krishna more than just having, you know, some kind of ritual, you know, go on perfectly. Sometimes even in India, they take this to the extreme. And when they have darshan for the deities, they only have darshan for just a few minutes and then they close the curtains again. And when you ask them, if you ask them, sometimes they'll say, well, we don't want to disturb the Lord. We don't want to disturb him. So, you know, the deeper understandings of devotional service and how to please Krishna in more confidential ways is intimately linked with the relationships that we have with his devotees. Intimately linked. That's what the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is all about. This is the theme of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. One devotee meeting and praising another devotee behind the back of the other devotee. Not in his face, but also in the back. So, you know, in materialistic consciousness, we have a tendency to say things nice up front and then not such nice things in the back. That's our political mentality. That's what we do. You know, and we've been doing it for so long that we almost think it's like that's the way we're supposed to act. That's the truth. The truth is you don't say anything bad in front of somebody. But the real truth is you shouldn't say anything bad about anybody. That's a higher truth. Higher truth. So the devotees are just the opposite. You know, they'll be straightforward and help the devotee into the face, and then in the back they'll praise them and glorify them. And if everybody's doing that, you can understand what kind of atmosphere is created. If everybody behind the back of everyone else is praising everyone else for their good qualities and for their service and for their attempt and for whatever, then what happens? The atmosphere becomes surcharged with positiveness and uplifted spiritually. But if everyone's doing just the opposite, if they're being very nice to each other up front, oh Prabhu, you know, you're this, and then in the back they're saying, well, did you see that, what he did, and what about this, and I don't know about that, and you know. Well, the devotees are taking care of Narada Muni. He seems to be himself emotionally upset. And even though Krishna, their worshipful Lord and the supreme deity, is just in the next room upset, they don't neglect Narada Muni, saying, anyway, who are you? You know, we want to take care of Krishna. No. In this way, devotees, we have to learn this art of being with each other as devotees and taking care of one another, caring about one another. Adrishta purvam asmabhihi kidrisham tejacheshtitam akashmikam idam brahmans tushnim upavishchanam. Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram ki jai ho. Kidraj Govardhan ki jai ho. Giri Govardhan ki jai ho. Jai Shri Shri Gonitai ki jai ho. Gora Premanandi Hari Hari Bo. They said, we have never seen you like this. What is this sudden change in you, dear Brahmana? Please sit here quietly for a moment. See how nice this literature is. We can learn how to deal with one another in any circumstance by reading this literature. Somebody's upset, you sit them down and say, no, please take it easy, you know, like, be quiet, don't strain your, you know, and we take care like that, gently, to help. Text 12. Shri Prikshiduvacha Sa Ghad Ghadam Ubhachashru Dhara Militavochane Yatnat Unmilayanatva Sakampa Pulakachita. Shri Prikshit said, Narada replied in a choking voice, tears flowing from his eyes. As he began to speak, he opened his eyes with difficulty and bowed down to offer respects. He was trembling, and the hairs of his body stood erect. Text 13. Shri Narada Uvacha Manogya Sobhagya Bharaika Bhajanam Maya samam sangamayadvam udavam tadiya padaika dajota bhavabet tadaiva shantir atamain tar atmanaha. Sri Narada said, please arrange for me to meet with Uddhava, the only true object of exquisite good fortune. Or else, let me have from his feet one particle of dust. Then alone will my heart be at peace. Commentary. Digdarshini. Uddhava was present right in front of Narada. But the sage, in his ecstasy, failed to notice him. Narada first begged to be brought before Uddhava, but then reconsidered and thought himself probably unworthy to meet him. By explaining the demands of his heart, Narada answered the question about the cause of his strange behavior. Remember, they asked him, why are you asking so? What's wrong? Is something wrong? And now he's explaining. And it's interesting that in the verse, he says, first arrange for me to meet Uddhava, and then he says, or else let me just have one particle of dust from his feet. So Sananda Goswami is explaining what this means. It means that, you know, he was begging to be brought before Uddhava, who was standing right in front of him, by the way, and he couldn't see him because he was in ecstasy. His senses were not working properly because they were overwhelmed by ecstatic emotion, right? And then a person who is in ecstasy is actually the most humble. He becomes overwhelmed with dānya, This is a very deep subject, one that we'll speak about a lot as we continue to read this book, because it is a very essential point in this book, that Dainya, which is translated as utter humility means unconditional humility. It means absolute humility. It means that humility in which you see yourself as lower than everyone else. Or another way of saying it is, you see everyone else in a superior position to you. That is Dainya. And in many places in the book, it states that this Dainya is the essential prerequisite for attaining prema. Without this Dainya, you cannot get prema. In fact, the Dainya and prema are considered by the acharyas to be so intimately related and interdependent on one another that they define one to be the same as the other. So anyone who's claiming to be a premi, a Krishna premi, or a person who's on the higher spheres of devotional service in Braj, Bhakti, and all these Madhurya Ras, and all these things that you hear people talking about and promote, and canvassing people to come to their camp and hear from the Premacharya and all these things. You know, we have to see, if they're not exhibiting this state of Dainya, there's no question of that being real. There's no question of their symptoms of prema being real. Without this Dainya, without this humility that Narada is exhibiting here, he wants to go forward to just please introduce me to Uddhava. And then he thinks, well, I'm not, who am I to want to meet someone so exalted as Uddhava? Just give me a particle of dust from his feet. Never mind. I'll be happy. I'll be completely happy with that. The Goswamis, they were never saying, now I have found Krishna, now I have found Krishna, now I am. They were always saying, where are you, Krishna? Where are you? This service and separation, this Vipalamba Bhav, is the, especially in this last section of the Briya Bhagavatamrita, the subject. And it will be developed very nicely and to the extreme depths of Sanatana Goswami's realization. So now, Narada is going to, as he has with everyone else, he's going to praise Uddhava. Only this time he's praising Uddhava to Uddhava's intimate friends, but he doesn't realize yet that Uddhava's there in front of him. Text 14. Puratanai adunikas chasevakaya alhabdam apto namanugraham prabho mahatamo bhagavate shuyastato Mahabhibhuti Swayam Uchite Chayoho. He has received an abundance of our Lord's mercy, never gained by the Lord's other servants in the past or even now. Because Uddhava is the greatest of all Vaishnavas, the Lord himself calls Uddhava one of his own special expansions. Commentary. Digdarshani. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 11.16.29, when Lord Krishna, speaking to Uddhava, describes his own opulent expansions in the material world, he declares Uddhava his representative among the Vaishnavas. Vasudevo Bhagavatam, Tvam tu Bhagavate Shvaham. Among those entitled to the name Bhagavan, I am Vasudev. And you, Uddhava, indeed represent me, among the devotees. So sometimes devotees are called Bhagawan. Very special devotees, not just any devotee. When they have achieved Krishna's favor, Krishna's mercy, and have awakened their relationship with Krishna in such a way, such an intimate way. And Uddhava represents those devotees. He, you know, he's the symbol of those devotees. And therefore, Krishna accepts Uddhava as representing him. And of course, in the 11th canto and in the 9th canto, he elaborates even more that, you know, the devotees, his devotees, in this level of devotee is so dear to him that he purifies the universe with the dust from their feet. He doesn't do it himself, Krishna, purify the universe. He purifies the universe by sending his devotees everywhere, and the dust of their feet, when they're going everywhere, purifies the universe. And then, of course, he also says that, you know, anyone who worships him and calls himself a devotee is not really his devotee. But one who worships his devotee, he's a devotee. Krishna accepts a person to be a devotee who worships his devotee. You know, because someone, if he comes to you for something, there's always some suspicion. What's in it for it? What does he want now? He's coming and he's worshiping and he's asking something directly. But if he's going to another person and worshiping through another person, then it's more genuine, or it's more credible, it's more real, more believable. So we will stop there and hear more about Narada's glorification of Uddhava tomorrow. Hare Krishna. Shriya Bhagavatamrita ki jai. One question? Yes, please. No, I said just the opposite. I said just the opposite. I said they're not like that. Don't you remember what I said? You don't remember what I said. I said, if you get close to them, you will have to close your nose because they smell so bad. But I said, this Brahmana, who was actually Avadhut, you get close to him, his stool smelled like roses. What I was saying was that these people who are doing that on the road, they're nothing like that Brahmana. I said just the opposite of what you heard. But it's very good that you brought the point up, because this is a very good point, because it's exactly why Parikshit Maharaj said to his mother, please be attentive. Because I notice sometimes you're going like this. So when it's going like this, you know, there's something that liable to go in that you may not have heard, that may not be clear. So therefore, the way to avoid that is to be always attentive. Never let your mind go for a second during the class and hear every single word. And especially if you have a very active mind and it's a speculative mind, then what will happen is when you hear something that you don't agree with or that you question, then your mind inside will start to go, well, yeah, but what about this? And I remember this. And meantime, three sentences went by that explains what you just were supposed to have heard, and you may miss the whole thing. And then you can't actually know the person who's speaking, and that interferes with faith. So the development of faith is dependent just as much on your ability to hear as the person's ability to speak. Because even if the person is actually a bona fide speaker, if you can't hear, then you can't develop faith in that person. Of course, the responsibility also rests on the speaker, that he should be speaking the right thing. I mean, both things have to be there in order for the picture to be clear. You may have a radio transmitter very strong, but if your set is got, you know, the batteries are out or something wrong with it, you know, you won't get the sound. Just so in our minds, we're sitting in Bhagavatam class, right? And there's some nectar coming. And in our minds, we're hearing, you know, maybe we don't get the right idea. So I mentioned yesterday that the way to do that is to regulate one's life in a way that you're sleeping enough, you're not sleeping too much. If you don't sleep enough, you'll go to sleep. And if you're sleeping too much, you'll go to sleep. If you're not eating enough, your mind will be always, you know, when's the next meal? When's the next meal? You know, you won't be able to hear anything. And if you're not, and if you're eating too much, then you're just, you know, when's the next meal? When's the next, same thing, same thing. So if we regulate ourselves properly, do our duties very attentively and very devotionally, you know, and then when we sit down to hear, our minds will be alert and will be wide open, wide awake. In passion and ignorance, you can't hear. That's the problem. All of us are products of passion and ignorance in the Kali Yuga. And it's very difficult to hear as long as we're in passion and ignorance. So the purpose of the regulation is to come to goodness so that you can hear. Because then when you hear, everything becomes clear. Okay, we'll stop there. Hare Krishna. Shri Brihad Bhagavatamrita ki jai. Srila Sanatana Goswami Prabhupada ki jai. Narada Muni ki jai. Shri Uddhava ji ki jai. Gopremanandi.